Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 43, and I'm your host, Nick Ortigo. Apple just rolled out an iPad targeted at students and teachers. A Louisiana teacher gets a commercial license to go the extra distance. And the unfair reason some teachers have lost their teach grants and are now being forced to repay thousands in loans. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education, plus we hear from a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week we chat with a Nashville teacher that reads a novel in his class, but it's a math class. Hello, everybody. Nick Ortigo here, and I'm joined by teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt. Lissa, how you doing?
I'm great.
Did you hear the wallaby? You know, if you keep up with the episode, we talked about this wallaby that was missing in near Lissa's house. Yes. And it's been a big deal. It's been missing for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been spotted, but then it just frolics away back into the forest.
Well, they just found him.
I know.
This morning.
But were they able to capture him
though? No, they have him. He's safe. So he's been roaming town.
Right. His spring break's over.
For those that don't know, a wallaby is a small kangaroo that really has no business being in Mississippi.
Right. And his name was Jeff. And my students have all been drawing Jeff at different places in Hattiesburg.
Oh, that's cool.
Jeff the wallaby goes to the movies. And it's been fun.
So for those of you who are worried about Jeff the wallaby, he has been found and he is safe and all is well in wallaby world. Let's go ahead and we'll kick off the teacher's lounge. You know, there was a big event yesterday with Apple. Did you see it?
No.
It was directed to teachers and students.
Okay, I missed it.
Okay. And it was a big event that they rolled out because they have now released. They've always kind of tried to be in the school game, you know, with their iPads. Well, now they're diving further into it. They're taking another crack at it. And they have released this new fast iPad. I think it's a 9.7-inch screen at a price of $399. But if you're a student or a teacher, you can get it for $299. So $300. And kind of the big news, too, is I don't know if you keep up with this, but an iPad Pro is they allow you to use this pencil with it, this little stylus that apparently is pretty slick. But iPad Pros are expensive, and so is the stylus. I think it's an extra $100. Well, the stylus will now work with this new iPad that's directed towards students and teachers, and you can get that for a discounted price of $10, which brings it to $89. So altogether, you can get the iPad and the pencil, it sounds like, for about $390. So, you know, what do you think? Does Apple stand a chance to get back into schools and making this kind of something for all students should have?
I mean, I think they do, certainly if they make great deals with the school district, you know, because a lot of times those things are purchased for classroom sets by a grant or by, you know, funds that have been tagged for technology. So, yeah, I mean, I think certainly, if I was just an independent school and required my students to bring something like that to school, why wouldn't we take advantage of the lower price, better product?
Yeah, I saw they are going to offer multi-user support, and I wish Russ was here because he could probably explain this better, but it sounds like you could pass this around from student to student a little easier than maybe where an iPad's kind of tailored and locked in
it
for
is
one
true.
Student.
Right, yeah, that is tough when you have a classroom iPad that gets shared, because I had a classroom iPad or two that when someone lost theirs or it was dead or whatever, we would just hand them that one. But it is hard on those different apps and things like that because it's already set up with somebody else.
Right. You know? I guess I wonder, though, is Google and the Google Classroom software, and Apple apparently also has their own suite of tools that are being rolled out. But so we're about to see this big tug of war. But is Google so ingrained in public schools that this is going to be a tough
Apple
to
now
get their foot in there?
I'm picking up what you're putting down. Okay, I didn't realize that there was the whole classroom component also.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I think there's smart annotations that teachers will be able to do, with their own pencil. You can almost write a paper, and then a teacher can come through and do these little annotations on the paper. But do they stand a shot? Can Apple get their foot in the door, or are they too far behind?
I mean, they're definitely a little late to the party, and it is very widely used in public schools and private schools, but for sure public schools. Google Classroom is so helpful for parents, teachers, and students, and so it's hard to get everybody to switch to something new. You know, I'm not saying it won't be competitive or even better, but it's just hard to make that switch, you know, because then you've got tons of professional development that you, you know, it starts with the teachers. And so, you know, if Apple's willing to, you know, no cost, come in, teacher, your slew of teachers, all the new things, and, you know, give you grants and things. Sure, I'm sure they could break in, but yeah, it's going to be a lot on Apple.
You know, it's the Google Classroom's gotten so big. There's a lady who I follow on Twitter, try to get her on the show. I haven't gotten her yet, but she has 123,000 Twitter followers. Jeez. And she is all about the Google Classroom. Like, that's her thing. Like, do you know how to do this? Do you know how to do that? You know, so this is clearly, if you have 123,000 followers, just so people can kind of learn tips on how to use Google Classroom in their own class, you know that this is big.
Right. And see, and the thing is Google Classroom has been going for so long that people are like, okay, I better get on this, you know, teachers, that is. But they don't have a way to have training, so they turn to someone like her, because it's just, you get the information you need and great, that's awesome. And then you move forward and, you know, your classroom is a little more dynamic and a little more efficient. So that's what I mean, is Apple's going to really have to, they're going to need somebody like her out there.
The end game's really interesting because, you know, all these companies, they want to help in schools and stuff, but they also want to, I'm trying to think of the right word, indoctrinate the students with their product. And and think about when you and I were younger, we were indoctrinated with the Microsoft suite, you know, Word, PowerPoint. That's what we would write stuff when we had to do it on a computer. And then I hired some people about a year or two ago, and they, all these students coming out of college, they were very familiar with the Google suite. So like when they wanted me to like, you know, look over their scripts or something for a story they were writing, they would just send me the link and I could annotate on the side in the Google Docs. So there's more than just helping in schools. They want to
Like
own the future.
When I used to have a BlackBerry, and I loved my BlackBerry, you know, but then when it was time to make the jump or switch to the Apple iPhone, you know, I couldn't do it because I was so ingrained in BlackBerry, you know? And then I made the switch. Well, now I won't switch from an Apple iPhone because I'm, you know, that's such a big part. I don't want to learn something new, something different. So, yeah, I think you're right. They're doing great, helpful things, but they're also hoping to have people like me say, well, this is what I've been taught and this is what I'm familiar with. So these are the products I'm going to stay with.
Right. So the tug of war begins. Lissa, I know I've got another story coming up that's kind of on the sad side.
Oh.
Not sad, but frustrating. I think you've got some uplifting news for us before we get there, though, right?
Yeah, except for you should do the sandwich method, which means you have a positive at the beginning and a positive at the end.
You're probably
right. And a negative in the middle, but it's okay.
But I'm only the bearer of bad news, and you can bring the good news, so...
Yes, so I have a positive story out of Livingston Parish in Louisiana. There's a special education teacher who noticed a student wasn't able to have transportation to school because they were short a bus driver for special needs children. And so the district had tried to, you know, employ somebody to be able to drive this commercial bus. But, you know, it didn't happen, so the parents had to get their child with MS to school, and it was very difficult because they have four other children.
Right.
And so the teacher kind of noticed, you know, that this was happening, so she finally...
Like the student was having trouble, like, just showing up late
just or whatever. Even getting there, with everything else. I mean, you know, you've got to get to your own jobs and stuff, and that's a...
Yeah.
You know, when you relied on public transportation and then it wasn't there anymore, you know, that's a hard thing to fit in to your morning. So part of it was just they didn't have a means to get the child to school. So then the child would be considered homebound. Mm-hmm. So this special ed teacher, which I feel like I should say her name, Erica Fuch, from Louisiana. She,
is it Fouché? It might be Fouché. It's Louisiana.
There's not an E on
there's
the
not?
End.
Okay, I guess it's Fouch.
I mean, I would totally rely on you, the Cajun, to know that.
I don't know. Well, I don't see the name, but either way, just know that we're trying to get it right.
Right. So anyway, she decided to go ahead and apply for her license. And she passed. And so now she, before she starts her normal school day, which is a full day of teaching special education classes, she drives the special needs bus and picks up this student and many others, gets them to school.
Wow.
Yeah.
For she free? Just, like, is this like, is the district payer or is she just doing this?
Well, or? I mean, every bus driver is paid, but they're not paid in the same way that a teacher would be paid.
Right.
So, yeah, no, she's starting. I mean, teachers already start their days really early. I know. But if you're a bus driver, it's like for real early.
Yeah, you're like in bed by 7.
That's right. Like you're waking up the birds. Right. So anyway, she is doing that, then going on to a full day and then driving in the afternoon too.
So she saw a need, and then she went out of her way to get the license.
That's right, which I have heard from people that have tried to get a license, like coaches, friends of mine,
right,
and even church personnel. They fail that test a couple of times. They say it's not an easy test to pass. And she said, she was like, I didn't know if I could drive a big old bus, you know, but she wanted to try just to help. So nobody asked her to. I think that's what is so amazing to me.
Yeah.
Nobody asked her to. Nobody pushed her to. But the parents are the ones that came forward with the story to say, like, she changed our life.
Right.
Like,
that's awesome.
We think she should be noted for this because she's going above and beyond big time and then working a full day in between.
All right. So the first question that comes to my mind, and you may or may not have the answer, but like, so the district doesn't have an obligation to have somebody? Like, they can just be like, sorry, we can't get there? Like, how does that work?
Well, yeah, if you have a really large district and you have, I mean, yes, that can happen to where you don't have someone that can drive that bus. I mean, you don't.
I just always assume that, like, that was, the burden was on the district. Like, if there's a student standing there waiting to be picked up, they, you know.
Right. I mean, I'm sure, and it could be different in different states.
Yeah, it might be.
But, right. I mean, I would think, well, you have to make it happen. And I know that the district in the story, it says that they really tried. And then, and that they did. They were asking anyone to please help because they didn't have anyone to drive this bus.
Right.
But I don't think they intended for it to be a teacher.
I worry about teachers sometimes, though. I worry about, you know, to be a good teacher, you have to have that personality where you give, give, give. And clearly that's what this lady's doing. I mean, she is give, give, giving.
Right. Anna Ray of Sunshine. I mean, in the story, you see her just greeting each child with a smile. And, you know, of course, she's bashful when they talk to her about, you know, wow, what an amazing thing. She's like, I'm just a teacher. I just am someone that decided to drive a bus, too. I'm just a teacher that drives a bus now. There's nothing flashy here. But, no, it's exhausting. I mean, she's probably exhausted.
Well, hopefully there's some state legislators, you know, listening and being reminded, you know, we got to take care of these folks who are taking care of others.
And you never know. It could be something happened where, you know, someone fell ill and they were just needing to fill the need kind of quickly. It may not be that she's always driving the bus, but she definitely stepped up when she could.
All right. So I've got one here. It's the, you ever heard of the Teach Grant? This is the one where, you know, you're coming out of college and you want to get some money to help pay for school, and they give you a grant. I think it's usually around $4,000 a year or up to $4,000 a year. But then you have to turn around and teach, you know, type of subjects that are a little difficult to find teachers for, like math or science, in lower income districts.
Right. So you could have to move.
Right.
Substantially far away from where you are.
Well, NPR story out this morning, that'll make your blood boil. So turns out that there's a study that found thousands of people this has happened to, where they get the grant, and if you don't live up to the obligation, like you don't actually follow through, I think you have 8 years to get 4 years done in this lower income district, they will flip that grant into a loan. So you got to pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, turns out the company that's been administering this has flipped it to a loan for thousands of teachers, not because they haven't lived up to their obligation, but because of like minor errors on the yearly tracking and application process. One guy says he didn't sign and date the paperwork properly. He caught it after he missed the yearly deadline, sent in a new form. Boom, all of a sudden it's a loan now. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a loan with interest. So what, $4,000 is now $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
He would call, try to appeal it. People who he talked to would be like, you can try, but you're not going to win. Just really red tape, bureaucracy type stuff, where these people are now having to pay back this money, even though
they
followed through.
Part, right.
Yeah. Another teacher, similar story. She apparently never got like the documents and wasn't quite sure on where to send them to. She would like correspond with people. Hey, where do I need to send this document to? She would finally figure it out, get it in. They would say, we never got it. It's now a loan. So just, again, just bureaucracy and red tape that's really sticking it to these teachers who, you know, lived up to their end of the obligation, but just couldn't get that paperwork done exactly the way it needed to be done, every T crossed and every I dotted.
I mean, yeah. Wow, thanks. While we have a teacher shortage across the nation, thanks for making it harder for the ones that were willing to go into areas where there were shortages. Wow.
And this is where journalism really could make a difference. You know, like NPR, I saw the story hit like 5 hours ago. And the outrage on Facebook and everything is, you know, through the roof. And it should be. And hopefully somebody who can regulate this process through the Department of Education or whoever can put pressure to make this right. It's just not right.
It's not right. And it's ugly. You know what happens now? Now there will be more and more people coming forward to say, oh, yeah, something similar happened to me. This is what happened to me. I mean, then it's going to, you know, really expose how ugly it's been. That's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, apparently it's the Department of Education that does the TEACH grants, but they hire a company called FedLoan, and they're the ones that actually manage the grants. And it's FedLoan that has been a stickler about this stuff. So hopefully this will open up to a further investigation. And, you know, it's just good faith. Just go, if people are in good faith, you know, doing this, don't be such a stickler about the paperwork.
Right, because I can say coming out of college, there were a lot of my friends that they moved like 6 hours away to be able to uphold their end of this bargain. They moved somewhere they didn't know anyone. They're young, single, female, you know, in this area that they didn't know anyone. So like, whoa, that's really a shame that you're going to give someone a hard time when they're doing all that and teaching children that need a great teacher. Like, wow.
Yeah. And then to stick it to everybody and have the interest accumulated with that. This one lady said that in the story that she didn't have a notice that it was being flipped to a loan. Like basically she just got the bill and it wasn't $4,000. It was $5,000. And it's like, you owe us this money. Start paying. Yeah. So hopefully they get all that straightened out. You know, you used to teach math.
Yeah.
And we have a really interesting guest. He actually teaches math, but he uses a novel in the process. He has his students read a book, and he says it helps them learn math.
Interesting. I used a book once. I used Outliers.
Outliers? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah. How'd that work out?
It was cool. It was fun. The kids were super interested, you know. And then, of course, we used it to do different things like mean, mode, range, you know, just statistics.
Well, he did not use that book, but he uses a different one, and we will learn more about it right here. Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment is a Nashville teacher that does what a lot of educators do, and that's read a novel to his class. But what sets Joel Brazaire apart is that he's not teaching English when he reads that book aloud. He's teaching math. Joel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So this is really interesting to me. First, to bring our audience up to speed, you're not teaching elementary school. You're a little bit above that, right? And what's the math class that you're teaching?
I teach 7th grade pre-algebra, yes.
And so everyone's probably thinking, you know, pre-algebra, it's one thing to be able to teach elementary students maybe through reading a novel, but you're starting to get into pretty complex math when you start moving into the pre-algebra world. How does a novel tie into this?
Well, I think the particular novel that I use ties in two really important ways. Many of your listeners might be familiar with the novel The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime by Mark Haddon. It was a bestseller when it first came out in, I believe it was 2002 or right around then. The main character is a 15-year-old boy who has a form of autism and is very, very gifted in mathematics. So he can't really tell the story that he's trying to tell without sort of interrupting with all of these math ideas that he finds fascinating. And so as the book progresses, the students really sort of come to enjoy this character. They really like him. They connect with him. First, he seems really off-putting and weird, and he becomes a really sympathetic character as the book goes on. And because of that, when he talks about something that's interesting to him, the students are invested. They're immediately hooked. What is Christopher talking about? What does he mean by, you know, he explains the famous math Monty Hall problem. They want to know about that because it's interesting to this character that they've come to love. The second reason is it's a little more subtle, but it's actually my favorite thing about this whole study that we do. It's a mystery novel. Mm-hmm. And what I try and show my kids is the same problem-solving strategies and skills that we're learning about as pre-algebra students, because that's a really big focus of pre-algebra. It's not just a list of topics that you need to cover before you get ready for algebra. It's a whole new way of thinking, thinking analytically, thinking conceptually about topics, not just memorizing algorithms. You know, it's very, very different. The same way that we're learning to problem solve as math students, we can take those same techniques and problem solve something different, like a mystery novel. And I'm trying to show them that mathematical analysis and thinking is everywhere, not just when you're trying to solve a math problem.
And so you mentioned this, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime is the title of the book, and it's by Mark Haddon. And I'm sure you probably know this author better than I do and a lot of our listeners. Do you think he had any intention when he wrote this novel for it to be used in a math lesson? Or was it just simply this character who happened to be good at math?
I think probably not. But what's really, it's really funny, the article that was published last week, he actually responded to it. It's the first time I've really had any interaction with him was in the last couple of weeks. And he said something to the effect of, it's really nice to see my book included as a maths, he's British, so it's maths. It's really nice to see my book included as a maths book for once. Because I think a lot of times it gets, and rightfully so, it's a really introspective and sympathetic look at this boy who has autism, and it really humanizes him, and it really lets kids connect with someone who's very, very different from them. And I think a lot of times it gets sort of put in that category of, you know, books that are about children with special needs or books that are about how to deal with difficult situations when you're a teenager. And so he commented, well, it's really nice to see it included as a maths book for once. So I don't know if it was his intention, but I know from very recent
right.
communication with him that he's certainly not opposed to it.
How long have you been presenting this in your class?
I was trying to do the math on it. I think it's at least 12 years now.
Oh, wow.
It's certainly a decade.
Where'd the idea come from for you?
Well, my colleague who teaches social studies actually teaches his social studies class through three novels. The Cultural Revolution in China, he reads about Red Scarf Girl, and the Middle Ages, they read a book called Strongbow, and Animal Farm about the, you know, the rise of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And I saw him do that for a few years, and I really liked the idea, and the kids really do well in those units, and they really connect. And I thought, boy, it'd be nice if I could do something like that in math, but it would really just take the right book. Like, it would really just take a really specific thing for it to work. I only teach pre-algebra. You know, very few math teachers have the luxury that I do of having one prep. And so I was like, man, if I'm going to find a book that works in pre-algebra, it would just have to be dialed in perfectly. A few months later, I read this novel and I was like, well, man, I found it. Like, of all the dumb luck, here it is. And so I worked for a couple years on a curriculum for it and got a lot of feedback from him and feedback from English teachers in our building and some other math folks. And it's sort of evolved over time into the curriculum that it is now.
So as far as you know, no one else was really using this book in a math class.
I was not aware of it beforehand. I wasn't aware of any other novel studies in math class before this book. I'm very grateful I had the support of my department chair and my administrators in pursuing it, but it was a real sort of flyer that I took to see if it engaged kids in a different way, how it engaged kids, and I'm really grateful with the response that it's had.
Well, kudos to you with that. You were talking about engaging kids, and you've already kind of generally spoke on that, but can you give me a story or a specific example of where you felt like the book really connected with another student individually?
I can think of a number of instances where kids did not really have a good track record of participating in my class. We do a lot of group work, but there's a lot of teacher-led discussion too. And just like with any class, there's a certain percentage of kids that are really comfortable putting their hands up and sharing. And there's always a certain percentage of kids that are way more hesitant whether it's they lack confidence in math, whether it's they're just not used to participating in a math class because their voices get a little more drowned out by those who are really strong math students. Whatever it is, there's always a ratio of kids who really tend to participate and kids who don't. And what I see every year is that certain kids move from the camp that doesn't participate to the camp that does as a result of reading this novel. I think a lot, it helps a lot of kids identify as math people differently. Hmm. Like, I may not be the same type of math person as, you know, the ones who are really fast or the ones who get the answer right away, but I had a lot of, you know, these kids get in the habit of participating in a whole different context because we're reading a novel. We're not doing traditional math. And that habit carries over once the novel's done and we're back to doing more traditional math. I see that happen all the time. And it's a huge selling point to me to keep doing the novel study, in that whether it's just habit, kids get used to participating in a math class again because we're doing something totally different, or whether it's an identity piece where they can see themselves as math people differently simply because we're doing something that maybe jives with them a little bit better, like a novel.
So when you're doing the novel study, how do you kind of break apart your class? I mean, are you teaching math for part of it and then reading aloud?
Yep. So the one thing that I like is I do read the entire book aloud. I have it broken into 15 sections. It's only a couple hundred pages long. So none of the sections take longer than about 15 or 20 minutes to read out loud. I have 55-minute classes, so I'll read for 20 minutes. We'll discuss what we read for probably 15 or so minutes. Sometimes that's in the middle of the reading, like, ooh, we just read something we need to talk about, let's pause. And sometimes it's at the end. Sometimes it's about the mystery of that we're trying to solve and how we want to break the clues down mathematically. And sometimes it's about the math that the main character, Christopher, presented. Sometimes we just, hey, let me tell you about what he's talking about when he's talking about prime numbers here. And so sometimes we'll just pause that. This happens at the same time as my chapter on number sense and number theory. So for the remaining 20 or 25 minutes, we'll work on the more traditional math. It probably takes us twice as long to get through that chapter as it would if we weren't doing a novel at the same time, but I have come to grow very comfortable with that trade-off, and we have the time to spare, so it's worth it.
Do you find that the novel, for lack of a better way of describing this, boost your street cred with the students? Like, do they not just look at you as a math teacher anymore when you introduce this to them?
I think in some instances, yeah. I think that's a little bit of it for a certain type of kid. I think especially the ones who are a little bit math phobic, the ones who maybe haven't had as good an experience in math in previous years, the ones who are more predisposed to dislike math for whatever reason, are also a little more predisposed to not like their math teacher just because of guilty by association.
Right, like it's like going to your dentist or something.
Right, exactly. There's nothing wrong with the dentist, but man, he keeps messing in my mouth and like, you know, that kind of thing. I'm sure he's a great guy, but yeah. You know. So this is something that's very, very different. And in a lot of cases, the kids who do not identify as math people, well, they're readers or they're into drama or they're into music or something else. And so this sort of leans a little bit more in that direction. What's interesting is some of the hardcore math kids, you know, sort of grin and bear it during this unit. Mm-hmm. And they would much rather, like, can we just do the math that I'm really good at? Like, that's a stretch for them. But I'm also okay with that. I'm okay with really, really comfortable, quote, mathy kids being stretched in a different direction during that time. I think that's good for them.
You're and probably right.
It usually ends up in a good place for all the camps, all the different parties involved.
If a math teacher is listening and they want to give this a shot, what tips do you have for them? What pitfalls do they need to watch out for?
So the first one is, this is a banned book in a lot of districts. There's some language in it, and I teach it to seventh grade, which is probably like the absolute lowest limit that mm-hmm. you should go with this book. I do a lot of groundwork on the front end with parents and with the admin and with the kids themselves about, look, this is a mystery book. Let's use the language as a tool to help identify people's character. You know, if this is a mystery, we need to try and identify what type of person it is through not just the actions they take, but the words they say. So it gives some of the bad language in the book a little bit more, it gives the kids a purpose rather than just like, it's not just there for shock value anymore.
Right.
So I try and frame it in such a way where instead of them just being confronted with it, they have a purpose and to try and identify, oh, well, what the fact that he just used this string of inappropriate language, like rather than just giggling about it, what does it tell us about this character? And of course, I don't read it out loud. You know, I give it the television edit, but they're following along in their own copy of the novel, so they know what it is. Mm-hmm. And then as far as the other suggestions or advice, it's a really different thing to read out loud than it is to even speak out loud in front of people. I almost always lose my voice during this unit, even though I'm a teacher and I speak for a living, just projecting while you read and sort of the dramatic effect. I guess it's a whole different thing, but.
And you're having to read the same thing over and over again. I guess you have more than one class.
I practically have the book memorized after 12 years, four classes a day. Like there are whole sections where I realize I'm not really even following along in the text anymore.
That's great.
And then make notes as you go. Like, I know the parts that I need to emphasize. I know the clues because I've got my well-worn copy of the novel that's all marked up with, like, hey, this is a red herring, but it looks like a clue, or this is a clue, but maybe kids might gloss over it because it's not obvious, or, you know. So do that once, and then you're kind of set as long as you don't lose that copy of the novel.
Well, it's really cool what you're doing here. If someone wants to keep up with you and follow you along your journey as a math teacher, what's the best way to follow you, on Twitter or a website or what?
Yeah, so I've got a Twitter handle. It's just Joel Bezaire, Joelbezaire. That's my Twitter handle. My website has the full curriculum if anyone wants to use it. It's just a PDF. You can download it. Just have copies of the book. Like I'm not trying to, you know, retire on the proceeds or anything. If somebody would find it useful, they're welcome to it. So the website is prealgebra.info, and there's a hyphen between pre and algebra. So pre-algebra.info, and you can see menus there, and there's a menu for novel studies. I've written a novel study for a pre-calculus book, too, called The Housekeeper and the Professor.
Oh, wow.
Just because I got tired of high school teachers saying, well, your book works for middle school, but we don't have a high school book. And I read one and I was like, this would be a perfect one. So
that's
I've
cool.
You were curriculum. Like, yeah, I would love it if someone would implement it because I've never seen it implemented because I don't teach that level, but it's out there too.
Well, hopefully somebody is listening and they do grab it and run with it. And I know just looking on Amazon, the book's really not that expensive. Of course, I don't know about the calculus mm-mm. one, but the one that you're using, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. So again, Joel, we really appreciate you chatting with us. Are you ready for our pop quiz?
Hit me with it. Let's go.
All right, let's go. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
Ooh, I would have to say reading and writing, English.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
Budgeting.
Like in
life,
how to
organize a household budget, yeah.
Right. What does every child deserve?
Love.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
Oh, wow. I think time management.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
I like something that... I love the gifts that have a personal connection to the giver, because then, like, 5, 7, 10 years later, I remember who it's from. Gift cards are lovely, and I'm never going to complain about... you know, a Starbucks gift card or a Target, because those probably are the most, like, useful. But I also don't ever remember the connection. But I have some personalized things that I've received from people. And it's really nice to look at it and say, I remember when I was given that by that student, even if they're off in college by now. It's really nice to have those memories.
Which teacher changed your life?
I think my 7th and 8th grade science teacher... Mr. Workington was my favorite teacher. I don't remember what science he taught us. I just remember his personality was very, very easygoing, but he also had really high expectations for all of his students academically and behaviorally, but he did it in such an affable, easygoing way. It just really connected with me, and I've tried to take a lot of that. I didn't even recognize at the time, but having been asked that question before, I've reflected on it and realized, like, yeah, I really take a lot from his class, even though I wasn't really paying attention to it at the time and how meaningful it was to me.
That's great. And last question, pen or pencil?
Pen.
All right. Again, Joel, we appreciate
Pilot G207, if you want a specific.
Hey, there you go. That is a good one. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again, Joel. We really appreciate you chatting. And hopefully somebody will be listening and take a look at those lesson plans that you put together. That's really cool that you've tied these to some books.
Absolutely. Would love it and would love to help anybody. Just reach out if you need some help or advice.
All right. Thanks again. Take care.
Thanks.
That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or a comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and hit that subscribe button, and we'd also love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismiss. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortigo, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed!